Is 1612, the Indians told Samuel de Champlain about the great Lake Temiscuata and the St. John River. At that time, Madawaska became a relay post for couriers and messages of the king and the militia on their way to and from Quebec. However, it was not until June of 1785 that the real founders of Madawaska, the French Acadians, who had been deported from Nova Scotia 30 years before, came up from Fredericton to settle on the fertile land of the St. John Valley. Outstanding among their characteristics was a stubborn nature, but without this trait, they would probably not have survived. After nearly 200 years, their descendants remained to a surprising degree. Their stable virtues, their strong vitality, and their love of the land, religion, and maternal language, and have preserved many ancestral traditions and the social integrity that was sacred to their forefathers. The story of the first settlers is a miracle of survival, of tragedy and of heroism, of persecution and triumph. It is also one of romance, beautifully related in Longfellow's classic Evangeline. Simple peasants all, they dwelt together in love of God and men, their doors and their hearts open to everyone. There the riches was the poor, there the riches was poor, and the poor lived in abundance. On 100 miles north-northwest of Fulton, Maine, on route number one, U.S. number one, the town of Madawaska was incorporated in 1869 and named for the Madawaska River. A century of continued progress would probably make it impossible for the original citizens to recognize it, but in many ways it remains the same. The waterways are no longer thoroughfares of travel, but they are just as picturesque. The seasons come and go, each with its own particular charm. Abundant snowfall blankets the landscape, although they do not keep the inhabitants housebound. Modern equipment eases of travel and communication, and sports make winter months very different from the times when the primary problem is to keep warm and fed. The lengthening days of spring brings a perpetual rebirth of nature, and soon the spruce and fir, maple and birch and beech have sprung to life. Fall, of course, is a busy time of harvest, but also spectacular scenery with colorful leaves lying heavily in the woods where the silent moccasins used to tread. For many years, the Acadians remained a people apart by circumstances rather than by choice. Now they have become bilingual, and many have distinguished themselves in business, the professions, in industry, and politics. And they are looked upon with respect and admiration. They do not regard themselves as a clannish group, but rather their spirit is one of togetherness, regardless of ancestry. The visitor is often astonished to hear the purity of the language and to note the obvious link with the past that remains, such as their cleanliness, their extreme hospitality, and the remarkable needlework of the women and art handed down from mother to daughter. Madawaska, as all the St. John Valley, is a prime tourist attraction, and although its citizens have progressed with the time, at heart they retain all the virtues they have endeared them to so many throughout the ages. The following is the introduction to the Madawaska Centennial Book, written by Mrs. Julie Albert of St. David, Maine, in 1969. Quote, someone has compared a community which does not know its own history to a man who has lost his memory. In our own town is relatively young compared to others in the country, but already many of the traditions and customs of our Acadian ancestors were worth recording and preserving are vanishing from our family life. The old residents' unwritten information handed down to generations although liable to fluctuations and variations, contain much that is valuable because it has been from the very beginning preserved in human minds instead of cold historical print. Since our oldest resident had very little or no education, they often developed vivid memories, and many retained clearer impressions of the customs and habits of their youth than of their more recent happenings. We can understand and appreciate our civilization better if we are informed of the earlier inhabitants who once existed on the very lands beside the same water in the same valley we now inhabit. If we are acquainted with their mode of life, their joys and sorrows, their trials and victories, the concocted medicines and remedies for men and beasts, and their food and dishes now long out of fashion. Most of the things in this world go through three stages. First they are new, exciting, and interesting. Then they become dull, have more or less outgrown their function, and are put aside. If they manage to survive this dangerous period, they become interesting again, even romantic, tinged with a certain mystery for the power they have to give us insight into the lives of our ancestors. Some such antiques are the old iron kettle, the clay pipe, portraits, homemade tools and furniture, firearms, and so forth. They have become heirlooms to be treasured, and the not too distant future will be the only ones left to speak of the bygone days of those interesting in listening. The St. John River, so called because it was discovered by Samuel de Champlain on St. John the Baptist Day in 1604, used to be named the Woolustook. Woolustook, in honor of one of the Indians' greatest chiefs. Translators have interpreted as meaning Crooked River or Shallow River, flowing in the opposite direction from any other river in Maine. It winds leisurely its leisurely way between the fertile land of the valley, as if reluctant to leave the picturesque shore. Where it traverses Madawaska in the middle of its course, it appears in such enchanting beauty that has been compared to the Rhine. From the first, the soil was found favorable for growing plants such as fodder and cereal, for root vegetables like potatoes and so on, and for fruit that ripened in temperate zones. The climate is healthful, and the late spring and early fall frosts that were once the terror of the colonists are quite rare. The valley itself, by its very formation, is preserved from many natural disasters that occur elsewhere. Although winters are long and cold, the land is truly magnificent in any season. In spring, the quiet shadows of the thick fir and the spruce are dappled with the lighter green of sunlight on budding trees. The maple, the birch, the beech, and the alder thickets blaze gloriously in October, and always the river, tranquil, free, now black as ebony under the dark scolding sky, and then pink and gold as an afternoon light diffuses the shadows. Today, many French Acadians refuse to be drawn from the peace and quiet of their own realm to the attraction of the modern city. Home ties are strong here. Civilization has dispelled the wilderness. The majestic pines have nearly all vanished. The soft hand of the valley, once it has captured your heart, does not easily give it back. Corporation of the town of Madawaska, taken from the town records. Records of Maine show two separate acts of incorporation of the town of Madawaska. The first was March 15, 1831, and the second on February 24, 1869. The first, including territory south of the St. John River, disputed territory north of that river, incorporated a tract of 4,272 square miles known as the Madawaska Settlement. It was more than 118 times the size of the ordinary Maine or United States township of 6 by 6 miles. No other town of such magnitude has ever been created in Maine or any other state. This early town, 1831, was created as a continued assertion of the right of the state jurisdiction over the territory known to be within the limits of Maine. The state plainly intended to use this act to strengthen territorial claim in the boundary dispute with England. The town held two town meetings. One was to choose the moderator and the other town officers, the others for the choice of representatives to the legislature. Peter Lizotte was elected but did not qualify. In 1832, he wrote to Governor Samuel E. Smith. He had protested at the time of his election that he had no intention of taking the oath of allegiance to the United States, that he was a British subject and intended to die so. The 1831 Act of Incorporation was not repealed in the 38 years intervening before the second incorporation of 1869 and of the much smaller town of Madawaska, 38,174 acres. Since Maine, through its governor, admitted the ulterior purpose of the 1831 incorporation, since the town never sent a representative to the legislature, since the legislature in the Act of 1869 ignored its previous action, the town of Madawaska is not numbered in the chronological list of Maine towns until 1869 corporation. Madawaska, 100 miles north of Holton, was settled by Acadian French, composed of parts of the township 18, range 4 and 5, incorporated February 24, 1869, and named for the Madawaska River. Population in 1860, 585. 10 years later, 1,041. 1880, 1,391. 1890, 1,451. Population in 1900, 1,698. Population in 1910, 1,831. And the population during centennial year of 1969, approximately 6,000 inhabitants. In 1870, John Hammond had a store here. Later merchants were Baptiste Bois, Raymond Albert, Denis Abouchard, and Saint Thomas Hébert, Fortunat Petit, Ashby Frechette, and at Cleveland, George B. Michaud and Vital Jarpet. In its infancy, Madawaska lies in the musty pages of ancient ledgers in the town office. They were taken down from the back top shelves to participate in the 100th birthday of our town. These yellowing records, written in laborious longhand with many errors of spelling, attest to the almost complete illiteracy of the population in that area. All legal documents are signed with the X of her mark or his mark, proper names that remain only in cemeteries and in the memories of our senior citizens include Lacodine, Obelin, Zebedee, Denerat, Nazaire, Papia, Adonis, Delphis, Zosim, Pifin, Eucharist, and Omab. The giving away of a bien or all of one's worldly possessions strikes a pathetic note, as does the list of goods to be given. Many of these articles simply are no longer in existence and is an indication of progress. Let us look into the first 50 years from the incorporation of Madawaska to the voting for an international bridge in 1921. The cross-section of chronological events has been taken. The development of schools is reported in a second section. The bill for incorporation of Madawaska was passed in the House of Representatives and the Senate.
then approved by Governor Joshua Chamberlain, February 24, 1869. William Dickey was authorized to call the first town meeting, which was held at John Baptist Winnie's home, April 13, 1869. Simeon Beaulieu was chosen moderator. Olivier F. Sirouet was elected town clerk and made justice of the peace, as well as first selectman. Michel Cyr was second selectman. Hippolyte Cyr was third. These three men were also assessors. Other officials were Rémy Cyr, Romain Cyr, Esaïe Martin, fence viewers. The amount of $1,000 in labor was voted for the making and repair of roads and bridges, $75 for town officers and miscellaneous expenses. Future elections were to be held at the same place, and they adjourned. On September 13, 1869, at a meeting to vote for or against certain amendment to the Constitution and for all state and county officers, it was voted to send Peter Charles Hammond, who was the trial justice at legislature. At the second town meeting on March 28, 1870, John Hammond was moderator. Elected as selectmen were Octave Cyr, Xavier Cyr, and Rémy Cyr. $600 was awarded for the repair of roads and bridges, $80 to defray town expenses for the following year. It was voted that the price to a man to work on the highway would be the same as last year, that is, 12.5 cents an hour, 2 horses, 20 cents an hour, 1 horse and 1 cart, 12.5 cents an hour, 1 team of large oxen, same as a horse. It was also voted that October 20 would be the date that cattle could be let loose in the fall. During that year, one man disposed of his worldly goods to his wife as follows. For consideration of good love and affection to me and other valuable consideration, I do sell and convey the following goods: stocks of cattle and chattel, to wit, all my farming implements, grain, potatoes, household furniture, kitchen utensils, poultry, 1 mare, 6 cows, 8 oxen, 2 heifers, 20 sheep, 10 hogs, 1 wagon, 1 sleigh, 1 harness, 2 buffalo robes, and 1 cloth, in short, all my personal property, free from any encumbrance and against any adverse claim. June 1870. To the Honorable County Commissioners of Aroostook, a petition was presented to the selectmen of Madawaska for a road running from the highway at a point between Luca Bear's land and Zozimkote, through its first, second, and third, fourth, and fifth range of lots from the St. John River, and ending at the lake which forms one of the boundaries of Madawaska. The said selectmen unreasonably refused ever since to lay out this road. Therefore, we being the parties aggrieved, pray your honor to view said route and lay out a road, signed by 15 citizens. In a short while, the meeting was held, all parties heard, and it was judged that such a road would be a common convenience and necessity to the inhabitants of Madawaska. This had been unreasonably refused, as stated in the petition. On September 6th, the road was started. Other articles most commonly given to their heirs were the thrashing machine, the plow, the iron forks, the winnowing machine, iron traps, chain and grapple, bake pans, tea kettles, dishes, bowls, cutlery, a cradle, grain, dresses, grindstone, oxen yoke, and so forth. Animals were designated by color and markings: speckled yellow, white spots on the forehead, 1 lame right leg, and so forth. The farmer was called a yeoman, and the occupation of journeyman. Most common. Since there was very little traveling done at this time, it can safely be assumed that this was a recorded little translation of the journeyer, or a man who worked for someone else by the day, During the first years, the long S's is in common use, and these men, who were more accustomed to the plow than the pen, wrote slave for slave, S-L-E-A for S-E-L-E-I-G-H, flower, F-L-O-W-E-R for F-L-O-U-R, and so on and so forth.
Men of note. From the main registers and the main legislative manuals, we find that the Office of Registry of Deeds for the Northern District was first held by Louis Cormier of Montcarmel as early as 1855. He was succeeded by James Keegan, followed by Thomas Pitsey, both from Madawaska. In 1887, the office was held by Arthur A. Daigle. These were followed by Joseph Cyr of Frenchville to Jules Albert of Saint-Ovid, after which the office was moved to Fort Kent in 1912. The registrar there was to Jules Albert, and at the present, Alva Thibodeau. The first Acadian convention to be held at Miramacook in 1881, the Honorable Libet Thériault representing the Madawaska region. The town of Madawaska representatives to legislature date back to 1870. We find Peter Charles Keegan in office. He was followed through the year by Remy Audeg, Arthur Deg, Jules Albert, Luc Albert, Remy Audeg, Vital Erdeg, Austin Wiley, Rita C. Michaud, Francis Rowe, and Emilian Levac, who is our present representative and floor leader. The first men from this area to occupy the Senate seat from the St. John Valley was 1910. That was all French Acadian origin. Patrick Terry of Lille, 50 years later, was occupied by Edward P. C. The arrival of the Acadians to St. David of Madawaska. It was on June 1785 when the would-be founders of Madawaska abandoned the little parish of St. Ange to pay the boat. After 10 days of much difficult march, they perceived the valley was getting wider, with soft undulation and contours, and they knew that they had reached the promised land. On the virgin soil on the south side of the river, about a mile and a half from the Indian hamlet of Edmundston, or directly behind where the St. David Church now stands, Joseph Daigle planted a wooden cross, which all saluted as a sign of salvation and hope in the future. This spot had been selected because it was elevated, and in the spring of the year when the river runs out, all low flats are flooded. But being observant as they were, these Acadian people had selected this high flat, knowing they would be safe from spring floods. Land belonged to whomever cleared it, and this they set about to do at once. With the center of the colony being a short distance from the actual St. David Church, land holdings were divided into long, narrow fields stretching away from the river, which accounts for their later being called suspender farms. This was so that each had a varied terrain with combined advantages, such as river frontage for fishing and water outlet, level lands for farming, and the hilly land for timber and maple. In the second year, Father Leclerc had the joy of celebrating Mass in a little bark-covered chapel erected by the colonists, not far from where the St. Basil Church is today. From Caramoascot, the St. Arrived the families of Soucy, Albert, Michaud, Levasseur, and associate. Then came the Dubois, Beaulieu, Gagné from Nilvat, Guimont and Ouellette from Rivière-Well, and so on and so forth. Redskins at home. The primitive site of the Milicetes, who were to become the most faithful allies of the Acadians, was at one time where the city of Edmonton now stands and was called Madawaskik, Madusakik. There is controversy among the translators. Some say the name was Mi'kmaq for porcupine place, while others claim it meant the junction of rivers or grasslands extending to the four riverbanks. More agreed with the porcupine theory because of the prevalence of this animal in the region. This tribe numbered about 300 and belonged to the Abenakis or the Dawn people, who in turn belonged to the Algonquin Confederation, one of the most important Indian races. As soon as our forefathers arrived, two young men were delegated to visit the Indian chiefs to tell them that they were here and that their elders would meet them the next day. At first a little weary, the Milicene soon let down their suspicion and cordially invited the white men into the room of the Grand Council, which was filled with warriors. This diplomatic visit was worth much to the Acadians because Chief François Xavier had at the time some 200 warriors under his orders. The Acadian representatives would have been at their mercy had any differences occurred. As it happened, the old chief's pride was faltered and he took them under his protection. The Milicetes were expert hunters and fishermen and taught the newcomers the basic principles of becoming woodsmen, trappers, guides, and surviving in the woods. Some of their canoes were hollowed from logs, while others were made from hides stretched over frames. But by far the most beautiful was the bark canoe, covered on the outside with paper birch, its joint waterproof with pitch pine and natural gum. It was lightweight, graceful, easily controlled, and rode the water as solidly as a fallen leaf. Until the coming of the white man, nails were unknown. Long pliable roots and animal sinews were used for binding, sewing, and making the snowshoes. Trees for canoes were cut only in the dark of the moon because it was believed that the wood was then less subject to worms and rot. Today the descendants of the Milicetes are on the Tobique Reservation, little given to agriculture and decreasing in number. They had kept the nostalgia of the woods and do not closely associate with the white race that dispossessed them and prefer to blend with the shadows of the last oak and the ancestral forest and wait for the death of their race. Candle making in the St. John Valley during the early years of the settlement. Before kerosene and gas lamps, the candle was the only means of illumination, and every home made its own water candle, the chandelle de la baguette. The great cauldron of hot melted suet was set beside a tub of cold water. Four or five twisted wicks were attached with a weight at the end of each to a horizontal stick. These were dipped into the suet, pulled out, plunged into cold water, the process being repeated until the candles were of proper thickness. The candle was lumpy and rough. It smoked and gave off a limited circle of yellowish red. But at once, humble and proud, its plucky rays lit the patient labors of our mothers. They guided their bare feet to the cradle and were faithful even until death. And all during the wait, they kept silent vigil at the head of the deceased. Blessed on Candlemas Day, these candles were lit for the protection against the fury of lightning and sudden floods. Later, the candle mold and suet was placed by wax. But how simple life was by the light of the water candle. Wives and mothers. Colonization could not succeed without the help of women. It was our mothers who prevented our race from disappearing from the mass of the Anglo-Saxon population. It was they who, with the faith of Brittany and the songs of France, perpetuated the vast America of proud generations. They were the conservative element, stabilizing influence that affixed a displaced people to the soil with their routine lives and their ancestral habits.
Back in the 17th century, the Canadians had the Don Juan. When they married, Louis IV accorded a premium to all young men who married before 20, girls before 16, and other families, 12 children. So the most authentic wealth of these people, who had neither influence, privilege, or distinction in the world of affairs, was their numerous offspring. One child followed the other so closely that a neighboring family, one might have 18 children and the other 22. What the young woman did not bring to marriage and dowry, she furnished in the honesty of her soul, in her courage, and the spirit of sacrifice required to raise a large family. She cooked, hauled water and wood, did the laundry in wooden tubs, made soap, fashioned candles from suet and tallow, and learned the different uses of herbs and roots by treating diseases. She had nothing to say in the affairs of the church or the village, but if the men made the laws, women made the customs. How heavy is the debt we owe to these generous women who, by the fruit of their untiring labor, have modeled, affirmed, and guided the development of so many little beings. In their homes, they preserve the language, the religious and happy atmosphere.